coming in as Lube. Go with Ike Sider then.
Flames bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
Here it is, put it in the win column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
We are underway this hour on Flames Talk. It is Thursday, September 26th. With Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg. Sports Drive's underway, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. We're on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. The Flames are halfway through their 2024 preseason schedule. They hit the midway mark after a 4-3 overtime loss at Abbotsford Centre in the Fraser Valley Wednesday night, against the Vancouver Canucks, a night where they split goaltending duties. Dustin Wolf saw the first two periods, looked very strong, and Devin Cooley saw the final period and 58 seconds of overtime. And that's where we're starting with our buddy Kevin Woodley. First of all, hi, Wes. What's going on? Good to see you.
Hey, buddy.
Kevin Woodley joins us now in Goal Magazine and NHL.com out of Vancouver. He had eyes on that game Wednesday night at Abbotsford Center and eyes on both Dustin Wolf and Devin Cooley, who we've talked a lot about with Kevin, but now an opportunity to watch him play live. Mr. Woodley, first of all, how are we doing? Welcome back to the program.
We're good. We're good. There were eyes like the googly eyes emoji emoji on the game last night, because that was I was really impressed by both of them. I had a young WHL goaltender who was watching the game text me in the third period with just basically, Devin Cooley is really expletive good. And this is a young man who really understands the position. So I thought that was a real positive. I thought they were both really good last night. That continues to bode well, especially on a night where the Canucks dressed a pretty veteran-laden lineup, and the Flames very much did not, outside of Tyson Barry.
Well, and there were definitely some high-quality opportunities generated by that Canucks team, and both guys had to be very sharp. I guess just your observations on Wolf and Cooley, and what stuck out to you in watching them.
Well, it's funny because, I mean, there's the saves, but I'm looking more for the movement and the mechanics. And I thought Dustin just looked so in control of everything. Even when things did break down or some of Vancouver's high-end players got good looks from good spots, there was no panic. Not that I would ever expect panic, but just a real patience, really detailed mechanics and sort of staying over pucks and tracking. And a lot of the things that Devin Cooley talked about today, that he's added an awareness of and an understanding of over the past year, starting with Thomas Spear and now continuing with Calgary and Mackenzie Skapski and Jason LaBarbera. And that's one of the reasons I really like the fit, because some of the things that he unlocked last year in terms of those mechanics and the specifics of how they work are things that will continue to be preached there. And like Wolfie exemplifies them to the nth degree, and it's more impressive because he just doesn't have the square footage that he covers naturally. So he needs that patience even more so. And it's almost like it's harder to have that when you're smaller, because a lot of people feel like you have to move more and react more. And he just understands his frame, and when he places it in the right spot and moves into pucks, that he's good, that he's got it covered. And then the second thing I look for is just, you know, even movement, post-work especially, details of movement, after saves, after shots that have gone wide. Are you recovering immediately into positions that provide a level of insurance policy? So if it hits something and bounces back towards the net, you're not reacting to that. You're already in a position to get hit by it. And just a lot of those details look really, really sharp, especially for where we are early in the preseason after a short training camp. And again, not surprised. I heard that Dustin had an exceptional summer with some of the people he worked with. And so not surprised by it, but always impressed by it. And so, like, you make a save or a shot goes wide and it's just bang, perfect rotation into the post, backside edge, tracking back towards the goal line. just setting yourself up for the next thing. Sometimes that's a bounce off somebody or a quick puck thrown back at a net from a bad angle, and you put yourself in a position to make that save easily. But you're also putting yourself in a position to, if a play develops off of that broken play or that rebound or that puck shot wide, you've got your home base and you're in a position to move and react to the next spot. And just all of those mechanics looked nth degree dialed. And with Dustin, they look so fast as well.
It's funny because we've been asking you, you know, going all the way back to last year, and when it became clear, when you kind of dropped a little bit of a bomb on us a number of months ago about Jacob Markstrom not planning on being back. Lo and behold, Jacob's now in New Jersey. You know, it's been pretty clear that Vladar and Wolf were going to be a part of this conversation for this season, and we talked at length about Cooley when he was in free agency and then signed by the Flames. Now that you've got some eyes on these two and the reports on Dan Vladar that you've heard have all been positive, everything we're hearing from Dan has been positive in terms of how he's feeling. He looked really good in his first game in more than 6 months on Monday night when he played two periods. Like all these things, brought together, it's still a lot of uncertainty, but things are at the very least seem to be trending nicely for an uncertain goaltending situation.
Yeah, no, I like the depth. And again, I heard the same things talking to Jason LaBarbera a little bit just informally last night. The scouts all and coaching staff are sort of up in Abbotsford around where the media is, and just a quick chat in intermission, and same sort of feedback on how Vladar's responded to the surgery and how he looks and how he feels and why it was important to get that done when they did, so that he would set himself up for this season. And, you know, kind of like, I know I've said this a bunch of times and you guys are aware of it, but I do think people on the outside forget when he was healthy, he's given them a lot of good games. Like there is upside there that it's not like it's something you've seen signs of or glimpses of and think you can capture. You've seen it play out in the National Hockey League before, and it's just a matter of health and consistency. And so you add that to the promise of Wolf. And the one thing about Dustin is all the things he's so good at, and as focused as he is on the game and on every little detail and no stone unturned and all the things I love about goaltenders that are constantly developing and getting better. Got a reminder last night about how good he is at compartmentalizing everything and not getting too wrapped up in one thing and just going out and playing and having his focus on the right things. And so there are probably strengths that each of these three different goaltenders brings at this stage of their careers that, based on the people they are and the relationships they're building, they will be able to feed off of from each other. Like, yes, there's always competition. And these guys, like Wolf, is as competitive as they come, practices too. And learning when to let go of getting scored on in practice is part of that, you know, sort of ability to focus on the right things that I just talked about for him. But I feel like they're going to be able to learn lessons. Like, it feels like a great situation, and it comes with no pressure, because the expectations are not high. I mean, obviously they'll put pressure on themselves. They expect to compete and battle and win and prove themselves to be really good NHL goaltenders, but not at the expense of each other. And it just sounds like there's a really nice mix there. It reminds me a little bit of what they have in the goaltending department, which I also think, you know, if you don't sort of understand what goes on, can also be underrated. Like what they've built with Sigalet and LaBarbera and Skapski at the different tiers, and how much they work with each other. I just feel like there are a lot of positives right now, and environment will dictate how much other people see that translating during the game. But I also, even on a night where they were overmatched in a lot of ways and gave up some looks, I saw positives there that, you know, continue over from strides they made under the new coach as the season went on last year. So, not trying to raise bars on expectations or anything, but I think they've got a good thing going goalie-wise. And now it's just a matter of patience and letting it play out and remembering that because of some of the inexperience, there will be downs, there will be dips. It's inevitable. It's part of growth in the position. But don't lose sight of the upside. And as much as we're focused on Dustin Wolf, there's plenty of it throughout all three goaltenders.
Yeah. We are chatting with Kevin Woodley. He's our goaltending expert. He joins us every Thursday on Flames Talk. Check him out at InGoal Magazine and NHL.com. Joining us here with Pat and Wes. Wes?
Kevin, I'm fairly certain we've just added this question to the weekly template because it seems to be evolving as we go. But what's the latest on Thatcher Demko's injury situation out there in Vancouver?
You know, I think he updated his status right before training camp. You know, mentioned that it was a muscle injury. I think we all knew it was a knee injury. And that as much as there is uncertainty that surrounds it, there is also a sense from himself and the work he's done with the staff that he's turned a corner. And while they are being very careful not to put a timeline on it, the people I talked to, it sounds like in the last, I guess probably now 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks, after a lot of frustration and having to shut things down for a prolonged period of time in the summer, there is a sense that things have turned in the right direction. And as he said, he can get to 100%. Now, the exact nature of the injury, as I unveiled here at Sportsnet 650, I mean, the horse is out of the barn, and that's on me. I put it out of the barn and the reporting was correct. But to be honest, guys, if I could have a take back, I wish I could on that one. Because, you know, it's not something he wanted out there publicly. And I think it's probably upset him. But it's a muscle behind the knee that sort of, it unlocks the knee from straight and helps with a little bit of rotation and can help sort of pull and rotate the upper and lower leg in a way that doesn't sort of bug the meniscus. I don't know the degree to which it was damaged, but at the end of the day, it matches everything he told us. And that's why, you know, again, some regrets personally and a mea culpa there, because it didn't move the story forward other than having a name on it. It did not change what he told us in terms of the uncertainty and the fact that this is indeed an injury that not a lot of people have seen, certainly not in hockey. And with that comes a degree of uncertainty. And I think because of that, you see a move like Kevin Lankinen getting signed. You know, whether Demko's back right at the start of the season or 2 or 3 weeks in, yes, this buys him time, so there's no rush. This particular injury, it's called the popliteus muscle, has a very well-defined timeline for recovery of anywhere between 3 weeks and 16 weeks. So nothing like the 3 to 4 month injury. Yeah. And that's kind of, you know, so I think Lankinen's in part that and make sure that they give it as much time as it needs. But I think there is also an uncertainty because, you know, there isn't necessarily a medical procedure, although he admitted that he did have one this summer, unrelated and a small one. There is sort of no prescription on whether this could return and whether what was a good summer that turned into being shut down for a month could happen again in season. So they've got an insurance policy in Kevin Lankinen, and my God, what a good one. This is a guy who I had tagged on the 1B market all summer as being just barely behind Anthony Stolarz and Laurent Brossoit. The numbers over the past 2 years have backed up. I liked him for a lot of teams. Frankly, I think he's probably better than half the league's backups. And they got him for $875 because for whatever reason, nobody else. Well, I think I know the reason. He made $2 million last year in Nashville. And outside of those two names, Brossoit and Stolarz, backups pretty much all accepted jobs for $1 million. And so I think his financial demands left him without a seat when the music stopped in that annual July 1st game of musical chairs for goalies. And the Canucks end up reaping the benefits of it because I think this is a guy that, frankly, is ready to pop in a bigger role. Whether he gets that here or not, we'll see. But at the very least, for a team that all of a sudden needed an insurance policy, they certainly weren't scraping the bottom of the barrel to find it. In my mind, they got the third best guy, you know, in the backup 1B market in unrestricted free agency, and they paid pennies on the dollar to get him.
Kevin, understanding you're a goalie expert and not a contract expert, what do you make of Igor Shesterkin's situation there in New York? What do you make of the maybe uncertainty around his future?
Well, I think you've got a goalie who, when he won the Vezina, could have easily been up for the Hart, has the ability to be an MVP-level player. We've seen goalie salaries driven down, I think, for multiple reasons. One, you know, the cap being flat. Two, we saw teams win cups, I don't want to say despite their goaltending, But we saw teams win cups based on team defense, maybe more so than goaltending. We've seen the number of games even workhorse starters play decrease. We've seen the floor rise so that teams have a 2 and 3 in a lot of situations that they trust. And so that gap between their 2 and 3 and the number ones, even the stars, isn't as big as it used to be. And so that's all had a deflating. And then there's the volatility, right? Like Ilya Sorokin signs what was one of the bigger contracts along with Connor Hellebuyck at 8.5 last year. And he's not even your starter come playoffs. UC Saros, who got his extension, but had a real down year statistically last year after being brilliant the previous two. All of those things, that volatility, the are you going to pay, you know, double-digit millions when your goalie's on the bench for a third of the season, even the guys that play a lot? There's just a lot of factors that drive down salary. And yet I believe in Igor Shesterkin's case, and his camp believes that, you know, he's at that elite level and a game changer. I'm not arguing against it because, you know, at a time when the floor's never been higher, but the amount of guys where you really are comfortable putting that elite tag on them has shrunk, he definitely gets one. So I'm curious to see where this goes. Does he set a new market, or does the market pressure of the past number of years pull him back down closer to everyone else? You can make an argument he's the best goaltender in the world over the past number of seasons, even if he hasn't lived up to the lofty heights of that Vezina Trophy campaign. And so I'm as curious as anyone to see where this ultimately comes out. He's a star in New York. He fits comfortably there. They lean on him pretty heavily. They're not a team that, you know, is designed to win without good goaltending. And so, you know, just how far are they willing to go as the cap goes up? I'm not the only one watching this carefully. I think there are a lot of goalies and young goalies coming up that are kind of hoping he maybe sets a new bar. Him and Jeremy Swayman as well.
Which we still don't have any movement on the Swayman front either as it stands right now, which continues to be very interesting. Great stuff as always, Kev. Really appreciate the insight and was awesome. The timing worked out so well that you just happened to be there in Abbotsford on Wednesday night to give us that update and your eyes on views of Wolf and Cooley. That's awesome, man. Great to chat with you, and we'll do it again next week. Hey, thanks as always.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
Kevin Woodley is our goaltending guru. He joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. The best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call them at 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery. Kevin, you can get him on Twitter at Kevin is in goal. He's with In Goal Magazine and NHL.com and always outstanding stuff when it comes to the goaltending game. So that was great stuff, as always, from Kevin Woodley.
The very best in the goaltending coverage world, for sure.
Yep.
And it's not close.
Not at all. Nope. That was great. Hey, it's Flames Talk. It's Steinberg and Wes. And don't forget, you can get Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon. Go ahead and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's Flames Talk on this Thursday, September 26th, with Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. Hopefully you're doing well from our Groundworks downtown studio. Flames are now exactly halfway through their preseason schedule, Mr. Gilbertson. Four down, four to go. What do we see Wednesday in Abbotsford? Final score 4-3 in overtime. Canucks hand the Flames their first loss of the preseason. But, you know, that was not the story of the game. The story was, again, some nice, promising performances and maybe a few performances that left you wanting more. But let's start with the positive, because I don't know where the Sam Hanzik story has necessarily come from, but it's turned into one. Coming out of Young Stars, I thought Hanzik was okay at those three games he played in Penticton. But since main camp has begun and since the preseason has begun, Hanzik's turned himself into not only the preseason's leading scorer, but also has turned himself into a real nice story. This guy continues to be one of the most impactful forwards they've had so far in camp and was probably the best forward on the ice in that game against the Canucks Wednesday night. This has turned into a pretty neat one that I don't know might be one of the more surprising stories of training camp thus far.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, he was a guy who I think sort of, I don't know if it's fair to say flew under the radar Sunday in Seattle, but you know, there were so many storylines that he picked up a pair of assists and it maybe wasn't the focus. And then as we were sitting there on Monday at the Saddle Dome, he was playing up the road in Edmonton and all of a sudden he's got three more assists for five preseason points. And you're like, oh, okay. Wow. And then I said to you off air last night, as Ryan Huska alluded to, the pace of that game was different than what the Flames had played in preseason. And I thought Sam Honzek was swimming a little bit in the early stages. And I'll be honest, I wondered to myself, like, okay, is this where it catches up with him a little bit? And 2 periods later, I don't think you would say he was maybe the Flames' best forward. Like, it was so clear that he was the best forward that Calgary had on the ice last night. And good on him. Like, I keep using the same word with Sam Honzek, and that's assertive. When his game is assertive, he can really be a difference maker, you know? So we saw the skills plays again last night. That was a eyes in the side of his head pass to Matt Vigredine for what should have been a goal in the second period.
That was an unbelievable pass.
Like he had scanned his options before he got the puck. He got it and he quickly fired it to just a wide open teammate. So you see the skill stuff. I know one of the plays that really struck me was just winning a puck battle in the neutral zone. Like I can't remember which Canuck it was, but it was one of the more established guys. He just snuck up behind him in the neutral zone, popped his stick, out-muscled him, and gone the other way. He draws the penalty going back and forth with Vinny Desharnais, who's, you know, 6 foot a million and 200 and some pounds. And Sam Honzek's a big guy, but Vinny Desharnais is literally one of the largest men in the National Hockey League. And while Sam Honzek got knocked down at one point in that board battle, he went toe-to-toe with him for quite a while. And so you see the strength part. And then I think there's more speed there than a lot of people give him credit for.
Definitely more speed than there was last year.
Absolutely. There was the play in the third period where, he's sort of racing around a defenseman to create a high-danger scoring chance. And so, man, give him a lot of credit because, you and I both think it's preposterous that people were writing him off in Penticton. And yet in the same breath, I don't think we'd be defending his play, especially in those first couple games in Penticton. Didn't look very good, but he's really ramped it up. And there's no question. I don't think there was ever a question he'd be going back to junior. It certainly would have been a surprise, but this kid's ready for pro hockey.
Well, I'll say this much. Like, I did not come into main camp saying, watch out for Sam Honzek.
Yeah.
That was not to say that I thought, oh, Honzek's a bust. Let me tell you, they should just get rid. I wasn't thinking that by any means, but I did not come into this main camp after the Young Stars and after the season he had saying, you know, the one last year, yeah, I did. I even remember having a conversation with you about, you know, what about, like, could Honzek be a guy? He's part of one of the best draft classes in ages. Could he be a guy who makes an impact as an 18-year-old? Well, the answer was no. It did not make a very large impact. And this year, he was way, way off my radar in terms of a guy that would be doing what he's doing. Well, I give him a lot of credit because he has jumped right into the fray and played some really good hockey. And now the preseason only gets more difficult, you know, especially in those final three games. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday next week, you're going to see like 75%, 80, 85% NHL opening night rosters against the Jets and the Canucks, so on and so forth. Like, it's only going to become more difficult for him. But that's good. That's good for the Flames. It's more evaluating, better evaluating tools. So far, so good, though. I give him a lot of credit, and he clearly, year over year, has worked on his skating. He clearly has worked on, in your words, his assertiveness and his battle level. He is way more willing to take pucks to hard areas and take a little punishment to get pucks to hard areas.
Yeah.
It's how he scored some of these goals is because he's in those hard areas. And you're right. That pass to Gridden on the no look that should have been a goal, oof. That was high-level hockey IQ that he displayed there, too. Good for him.
Yeah, good for him is right. And I think he's, you know, we can overstate it so often, whether it's good or bad in preseason. I don't want to say he's figured it out as if a light bulb has just gone on, but I think Sam Hanzek is learning what his recipe will be as a professional hockey player. Because a guy his size, he's 6'4". I think he's over 200 pounds now. He's not listed that way, but I believe he's over 200. A guy his size can't be a passenger out there. And if there was a knock on Sam Hanzek, whether it was, you know, in the little bits and pieces I saw, if it was last season with the Vancouver Giants, yeah, if it was representing Slovakia at the World Juniors, like there were times you just wanted last season to notice him more. And I think it probably had a lot to do with the injury issues. He's maybe had a few shifts in the preseason where you didn't notice him. And I just think that is the sign of a guy. And we're talking about a 19-year-old. That is the sign of a guy who's really sort of understanding what he has to be a successful pro hockey player. The next step will be, I don't think, 6 preseason points is great so far. It's going to get more auditions. We're not talking about Sam Hanzek starting the season in the NHL, I don't believe, but we're talking about a guy who's going to be challenged now to go be a go-to guy in the American Hockey League.
Mm-hmm.
And if he can do that, it's only a matter of time before we see him at the highest level.
One other guy I've been quite impressed with throughout camp, I've liked Dryden Hunt in his preseason work. He is who he is, and he's comfortable in playing his game. He is, not every guy can be a really good American leaguer. Like, Dryden Hunt is a really prolific guy in the American Hockey League. He can play top 9 minutes, top 6 minutes, top line minutes in the American League. He was a point per game guy with the Wranglers last year. He's been a very prolific American leaguer throughout his pro hockey career. But what he's shown, whether it's been with the Flames or the Rangers or whatever, is that when he's brought into an NHL role, they're not putting him in the same role. It's not like he's going from being a top line American leaguer to a top line NHLer. He's going from one role to a very different fourth line role, checking role, 8 minutes a night, and he's one of the guys that has shown that his game will translate to playing there, because he's got a little offensive upside. He's got some nice skill, but he stays within what he is and does that against the highest level opposition. And so last night, the opposition wasn't as high level, and he showed off. That was a real nice finish on the game-tying goal in the third, sorry, the go-ahead goal in the third period.
Yeah.
And I've liked Hunt a lot in this camp, and I thought he had a pretty good camp last year too.
You see a path for Dryden Hunt to start the season in the NHL?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I sure do. Especially if they go 14 forwards.
Mm-hmm.
But even if they don't, yeah, I mean, head coach is a big fan.
Yeah.
We know that. And he can play that fourth line role. He turns 29 in November, so you're not worried about if he's sitting in the press box, right? If that's the way it goes. Yeah, I do see a path for him there. For sure I do.
I agree with you, and I think the way that he is playing is going to make it even more difficult for any combination of Coronado, Klapka, and perhaps Pelche to earn one of those jobs. Now, I've said a million times, I'll repeat it here again in case someone is just catching it for the first time. Like, Jacob Pelche, I really have a hard time seeing the Calgary Flames risking losing him on waivers.
Yep.
But if you're just going take waivers and everything out of it, who's been stronger so far in a very small sample size this preseason? It's Dryden Hunt, and it's not close.
Goaltending still good. Cooley good, Wolf good. Wolf's made 50 stops on 53 shots through five periods of work. He played two periods in Abbotsford, played, of course, the full game in Seattle. It's a .943 save percentage for a guy who is in his first ever training camp where he realistically has a chance to win an NHL job. As much as we talked about it a year ago, Jacob Markstrom and Dan Vladar were going to be on the team. We were far more confident about what that tandem was going to be a year ago than what we are this year. Wolf's trying to cement himself as one half of an NHL tandem, though. And through training camp sessions and through two preseason starts, he's done everything asked of him in that regard. So he spoke a little bit at the Dome today and was talking. He says he feels so much better at this camp compared to a year ago, too.
Dustin Wolf, that is. Yeah. And I always, you know, the save percentage is great. 9.943, I think you said, right? Yeah. Like that, obviously, that tells you something. I look just as much at the other side of the equation as just like, okay, what pucks are getting past them? And we've seen guys, as we know is going to be the case throughout Dustin Wolf's career, we've seen a lot of guys try to go high. He's covered the top of the net quite well. In this preseason, you know, guys aren't firing over his shoulders, which is always the fear with a goalie his size. I mean, last night, you've got a sort of two-on-two, and then Matt Coronato makes a little bit of a mind-boggling decision to leave his guy. And I'm not trying to take a crack at Matt Coronato. He's had a strong preseason, but that's one of those moments that they're going to sit down with the video and say, okay, well, You got to just stay parked here. So it almost becomes a 2-on-1, and then the pass banks off. What did it hit? Stick, skate, something?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's one where the goalie, I don't know what you want your goalie to do there. And then the second one is a Jake DeBrusk deflection.
Right in front.
And then looks to me, and I'm obviously watching on the iPad at home, but looks to me like it then went off Tenorti's body. Like it's sort of pinballed. So that's another one you just go, okay, well, you know, we're not talking about a guy who's getting beat 5-hole or anything like that. And so, yeah, Dustin Wolf, I think, is doing everything he needs to do to cement his start of season spot with the team.
And nice job from Cooley as well. Good for him in that in that third period. 58 seconds of overtime. I was also really happy to see that he was able to finish the game, because you're like, oh, that would just be awful if he hurt himself. So and he full skate today, spoke to the media, like he's fine. So that's really good news.
And I keep saying that I think the goaltending tandem is basically set, and I do believe that. But none of that is a knock on what we've seen from Devin Cooley, understanding that, you know, goaltending is voodoo and it's hard to figure out for the rest of us. I see a lot of good things. I understand the appeal there for sure.
Yeah. The athleticism is off the chart.
One more kind of, I know we touched on it briefly before, but pretty cool, right? To see Andrew Bacha get the assist he gets last night on Dryden Hunt's goal. I thought of his two preseason games, Andrew Bacha, second round selection in 2024, 18-year-old Calgary kid trying out for his hometown team. Incredible story just on the surface of it. I thought his second preseason game was
good.
Leaps and bounds stronger than his first. And to see him pick up that assist on what was then the go-ahead goal before he gets reassigned today to the WHL's Medicine Hat Tigers, I think we're going to be talking about a guy who goes and has a pretty big year in junior. And certainly a big piece of the future plan.
Yeah. Really, really nice pass. He joined us on postgame. He's like, I saw Hunt flash and I just knew I had to get it. He's like, I don't know if it was onside. But, no, it was onside. Well, it'll go down as an onside pass.
So. But quick question for you, Pat.
Yeah.
Was it onside?
It was onside.
Okay.
Yep. Fully onside.
I'll 100%. Take it.
By the way, watch out for Bacha and the in the Western League this year. He had 85 as an 18-year-old in his 18-year-old season. He's in his 19-year-old season this year. Like, wouldn't surprise me if we're talking 100-plus points with a very good Tigers team this year. Like, people are talking Memorial Cup for Medicine Hat. So, and I know when the Flames made their first round of assignments to, you know, when Battaglia and Hunter Lang and some of those names went down. I saw all over my Twitter when you put that out there, like, oh, when are they sending Basha back to Medicine Hat? A bunch of Tigers fans are like, send him back already, send him back. He played the two preseason games and was sent back to Medicine Hat on this Thursday. And yeah, he's going to have an unbelievable season with the Tigers. Also, Matvei Gridin sent to Shawinigan of the Q. He was traded there within the last week. He would still be with the team if the Q trade hadn't been made. If he was still with Valdor, who selected him in the import draft, he would still be in camp with the Flames. But the trade happened, and he was sent to the Cataracts. So he's in Shawinigan, and he'll start his junior hockey career, Canadian junior hockey career anyway, this season as well. So both those guys sent to the CHL after some preseason action.
Yeah.
And that gets him down to 54 players in camp.
And I'll just say the same thing about Gridin that I said about Basha. I saw such a significant improvement in his second preseason game. I thought he had some strong moments last night. You know, I loved because it just indicated to me a sort of acknowledgement and realization of how difficult the NHL and even NHL preseason is. Like that smile he had on his face after that great pass from Hanzek and then the save that Yuri Patera made with the glove on him. Like you couldn't wipe the smile off Gradin's face in that moment. And I think that was like, oh man, this league's really good.
Yeah. And just one other update. So Gridin and Basha sent to the Western, sort of the Canadian Hockey League Q and the Western League. Did get an update on Kevin Ball, the Flames defenseman acquired from New Jersey in the Markstrom trade. We've yet to see him skate with the Flames since training camp has begun. We're a week in. Did get a little bit of an update from head coach Ryan Huska.
Kind of expecting him to skate tomorrow, so we'll see how that goes. So there's a pretty good chance he might be in one of our groups tomorrow.
And which is good news because he does factor into what the Flames are hoping to do this season. So good to see that.
Yeah.
And we'll see who Kevin Ball skates with when he's back out there.
And fingers crossed because we've heard he's going to be out there any day now for
it
a
hasn't
few
been,
days.
Yeah.
Obviously something sort of kicking around. And I know you tweeted this, like Jake Bean and Matt Coronato left early last night. Abbotsford.
Didn't return.
You don't think that's anything serious?
No, I don't think there's anything major on either of them. They're both maintenance days as well. They took maintenance days on Thursday, didn't skate. Ryan Huska did update that said, yeah, you know, little tweaks here and there, but they're expecting them back pretty quickly too. So that's good news. Nothing major doesn't sound like with Coronato or Jake Bean.
Yeah, that is very good, especially if they can get Kevin Ball up and running. I do think they want to give him a look with Rasmus Anderson. You know, Ball and Bean are your left-handed defensemen that are sort of locks to be in the lineup. Mackenzie Weegar will end up playing on the left side. So an injury to one of those two or an inability to be ready for opening night would not be a great thing for the Flames.
Wes Gilbertson on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. Shan and Cam are producers this hour. This hour is the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.